right now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It's Friday. Everybody loves Fridays. Normally, the days of the week just kind of blend together for me because I don't work a lot during the off season. I'm not trying to rub it in. Working this week, working a couple days next week, working a couple more weeks before the Flames kick off 2016-2017. But we're pretty busy during the hockey season, so do need a little downtime during the off season. But after working this week, TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. Derek Wills in for Pat Steinberg on the big show. Rob Kerr will join us coming up in the 2 o'clock hour. Busy show again today. There's been a lot of news this week. Quite a bit of hockey news, too, for late in July. Before we get to what's coming up on today's show, I need your help. And Matt, feel free to chime in on this as well. So next week, two of my good friends from Ontario are flying in and they're going to spend a week with me. They have never been west of Ontario, Matt. Can you believe that?
I can.
What do you mean you can?
I can. Like, I don't know. They're not coming here for the Stampede.
No. It's coming here to hang out with me.
Like, I guess you could do that. I guess Derek Wills lives here, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I love it here. And they're going to love it here as well. So I've been here for 2 years now. And I've got a pretty good grasp of what we should do in the next week or so.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid that I'm missing something.
What do you got?
Well, I'm not going to say what I have because I want our listeners to chime in on what I should do with my friends while they're here for a week. So here's two things we have to do. We have to golf multiple times and we have to fish. I am bound and determined to catch a fish this time. I've yet to catch a fish since moving to Alberta. So I need to know where to fish, where they're actually going to bite my hook.
I believe Rob Kerr might be able to tell you.
Yeah, he's helped. But you know what? Our listeners are pretty smart.
Yeah.
I want them to chime in.
Yeah.
Now, let me put this out there. I don't know how to fly fish, and either do my friends. So I need to go somewhere where I can catch a fish without knowing how to fly fish. So I've got the right lures. I've got all that stuff. I've got the rod. I've got the reel. Don't have a lot of know-how when it comes to catching trout. And if there's a place where I can fish where there's something other than trout, that would be terrific too. So you can help me out. Please do. Please do. You can send your opinions, your suggestions to the text line 960-960. Or hit me up on Twitter at Fan960Wills. So I need your help. So please chime in. I'll read some texts from our wonderful listeners as they come in. But here's what's coming up on a busy big show on this Friday afternoon. Another beautiful day here in downtown Calgary. Organizers of the Stampede, spectators, participants wishing they had this weather for last week. A little too late, but hey, we're enjoying it. So the Stampeders improved to 14-0 following a bye week since 2005 and 5-0 at Investors Group Field since it opened back in 2013 and a 2-1-1 in the 2016 season with a fairly convincing 33-18 victory over the Blue Bombers in Winnipeg last night. Did you catch that game, Matty?
I watched most of it. I missed the last like 9 minutes and most of the first quarter, but caught the majority. It was a pretty good game.
Bo knows football.
Bo
good game it. For Bo Levi Mitchell. 3 touchdown passes and pretty efficient in how he played the game last night and had to do so without Joe West.
Mm-hmm.
And something Rob and I were tossing around yesterday. Who would emerge as his favorite target without West? And based on what we saw last night, the correct answer to that question would be Marquay McDaniel. 80 yards and a touchdown on 7 catches. So he was in Bo Levi's good books last night.
I really liked the game that Mr. Parker had as well.
Yeah, he stepped up. You know who didn't step up last night? Drew Willey.
True fact.
He stepped out last night, and that might be it for him.
I believe our friend Justin Dunk will have some opinions on that when we have him on the show a little bit later this afternoon as well.
Yeah, he's going to join us around 3 o'clock this afternoon, our CFL insider from Sportsnet. But what was Drew Willey's team may now be Matt Nichols' team. He actually helped them rally a little bit once he took over. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. So this is kind of a combination of a hockey story and a golf story with a local twist as well. NHL referee and amateur golfer Garrett Rank, a 28-year-old native of Elmira, Ontario, home of the Sugar Kings, shot a 369, and Jared Dutois, a 21-year-old native of Kimberley, BC, who for the last 2 years has played out of Glencoe Golf and Country Club here in Calgary, which, by the way, was ranked number 35 in Score Golf's top 100 courses, which came out yesterday or today. So congratulations to Glencoe. Great course there, the Forest Course. Done a great job get that back after the flood. Anyways, Rank and Dutois, two of the storylines in the opening round of the RBC Canadian Open, as Dutois shot a 5-under 67, Rank a 3-under 69 in the opening round yesterday. And let me refresh my leaderboard. Dustin Johnson was the leader. He has fallen into second. He's minus 7, 66 yesterday, 71 in his second round today. Luke List of the United States, currently 2-under in his second round. He's through 9 holes, and he is the leader at minus 8 right now. Dutois, 1-under after one hole today, so he's only 2 shots off the lead at minus 6. So Dutois, the guy who plays out of Glencoe, certainly a story in the first round, and you wonder how long that will last. Rank, the same thing. What a week for Rank. I mean, here's the problem for Garrett Rank. It probably doesn't get much better than it's been for him this week. It's probably going to be all downhill from here, because on Wednesday, Matt, he gets told that he's going to be a full-time referee in the NHL, realizes his dream. On Thursday, he goes out and shoots 3-under in our country's national championship, the RBC Canadian Open, which is his part-time summer job. Wouldn't you love to have that part-time summer job?
Yeah, that beats all the part-time summer jobs that I've ever had.
Yeah, that's right up there.
Yep, that's got to be up there for sure.
So those two guys have been great stories so far at the RBC Canadian Open. Now, despite having yesterday off, the Blue Jays actually slid into third place in the AL East after the Red Sox trampled the Twins 13-2, and the Orioles knocked off the Yankees 4-1 yesterday. So the Jays, one game back of second place, held by the Orioles, a game and a half behind the division-leading Red Sox, going into the opener of a three-game series versus the Mariners at Rogers Center tonight. Marco Estrada comes off the 15-day DL, and he's going to try to help the Blue Jays stretch their winning streak to 4 games. First pitch at 5:07. You can watch it on Sportsnet West and listen to it right here in Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Switching gears from good news to bad news. The Sabres of Evander Kane's in trouble again, Matt. This guy can't seem to stay out of trouble, can he?
He really can't. He really can't. This one dating back to an incident in June.
And there are some professional athletes, some celebrities in general, who think they're above the law. And I can't help but wonder if Kane's one of those guys. Evander, by the way. He was arrested in Buffalo earlier today, charged with one misdemeanor count of criminal trespassing and 4 counts of non-criminal harassment. And listen, I love the Sabres. I think the Sabres will compete for a playoff spot next year. I'm not convinced they're going to get into the Stanley Cup playoffs, but I think they're going to compete. Now, don't keep in mind, last year, they probably would have been in a fight for a playoff spot if Robin Leonard doesn't tear up his ankle in game one of the season. I think he gives them a legitimate number one goaltender. And in this new day and age of shrinking goaltenders' equipment, you got a guy the size of Leonard, and that's going to be an even bigger advantage. But when you've got a team with the likes of Rasmus Ristolainen, Sam Reinhart, Jack Eichel, Alex Nylander, their first round pick this year. I'm not sure that I want a guy like Evander Kane setting an example for those terrific young players. That would be my real concern in Buffalo right now.
Well, I feel like that was what a lot of people were concerned about when they acquired Evander Kane as well, because getting him, we all knew it was going to be a young team, and it's not like these type of things kind of came out of nowhere. Evander Kane's been in situations like this before.
Yes, and it seems like it keeps happening over and over and over again, so we'll see how that plays out in the courts. More bad news, not from the NHL, but from the NFL. Steelers star running back Le'Veon Bell facing a 4-game suspension for violating the NFL's drug policy. Now, here's a guy who is one of the elite players in the game. And if you're a fantasy owner, you want to have this guy on your team. The problem is, facing a 4-game suspension to start this season after he missed the first 2 games of last season after violating the league's substance abuse policy. So, talking about guys who can't stay out of trouble, Bell appears to be one of those guys as well.
I believe that this comes from Bell actually missing a test, not failing one.
You're correct.
But these are all reports, very early reports, I believe. I think he's still in the appeal process, and that's why we haven't heard anything official from the league or anything like that.
You can't miss a test, especially when you were suspended last year for the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely not.
Now, it's innocent until proven guilty, but a missed test is a missed test, and maybe it was simply an accident or an oversight or his alarm clock didn't go off. Who knows? But just not good news for Steelers fans or fantasy owners of Le'Veon Bell facing a possible 4-game suspension. All right, that's enough bad news for me. One of the reasons I tend not to watch the news is because there's too much bad news. So back to good news. The Rangers and RFA Chris Kreider avoid an arbitration hearing. A last-second deal, a 4-year $18.5 million contract. That's an average annual value of $4.6 million for Kreider. And I think pretty good value for the Rangers, Matt. Here is a guy who's got great size. And for me, he's probably the best skating big man in the NHL. And he's got quite a bit of skill as well.
He definitely have to be up there for me. This is a guy that I really found intriguing because he is that big body. We know that he can score and he's very tenacious. So I was really interested to see where he goes. Anytime you see a guy like that getting even close to the open market, you got to wonder, hey, could he land in our city? They get him for a pretty reasonable deal. They avoid arbitration, which is always good for both the team and the player, so they could find some common ground. I think they found a nice deal here with Chris Kreider. It'll be good to see how he develops for the next 2 years. Pretty good career so far for the 25-year-old, but I think he's got more in the tank and more to show as well.
The thing with going to arbitration is you just never know which way it's going to go, right? I mean, there's risk for both the team and for the player. And at this point in time, it's more of a game of chicken than anything else. Let's wait and see who blinks first here.
Yeah, exactly, right? And that's one thing that you don't want to see with these arbitrations. I feel like that was the big thing with why Joe Colborne didn't go to arbitration, because you didn't know what you were going to get out of it. So I just decided not to qualify.
And I completely understand why the Flames didn't go down that road, because based on the numbers he put up last season and, a good chunk of his goals were scored down the stretch. I wouldn't call it garbage time. I don't think that's the right term. But a lot of his goals did come after the team was out of the playoff race and the pressure was off. And the arbitrator, if he were to look simply at the numbers, would have given Joe Colborne more than the Flames could afford to pay him. So I get why Brad Treliving decided not to qualify him and try to sign him outside of that process. So speaking of Colborne, who's now a member of the Avalanche and not the Flames, we will try to get some Flames talk in. When I'm here, I like to talk Flames. I like to talk hockey. And it's been such a busy week. We haven't had as much time to talk about the Flames and the NHL as I'd like, but maybe we'll have some time today. Again, Rob Kerr coming in at 2 o'clock. But coming up right after the break, we are going to talk hockey. We are going to talk about an Alberta-based NHL team, but not the Flames. Although we'll probably mix a little bit of Flames into the conversation as well. Joining us after the break is the radio play-by-play man for the Oilers. Good guy as well. And we're going to talk about what they have accomplished during the offseason of 2016. Jack Michaels coming up live when we come back. It is 1:17 on a beautiful Friday afternoon on The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
When it's hockey, it's on The Big Show. Steinberg, Kerr, Sportsnet 960, Calgary.
Great tune. My favorite Genesis album. Nice work, Matt Rose. Nice work.
Hey, thanks, buddy.
All right, so I asked for your help a little bit earlier on. My buddy's coming in next week. Need to know what to do, specifically where to golf and where to fish. I can't believe the response we've had on fishing on the text line 960-960. I thought we'd get lots of people telling me where to golf. Everybody's telling me where to fish. Willow Creek Reservoir seems to be a pretty popular spot. Full of walleye, apparently. Someone wants me to Google Crawlings Valley. Maybe I'll get Peter Labardius to do that.
You Google it.
I guess he wants me to Google it.
You Google it.
Walleye sturgeon fishing on a jet boat. That sounds fun. South Saskatchewan River. Golf at Willow Park, Delacour. I really should hire a guide. Then I feel like I'm cheating. Anyways, we'll talk more fishing and golf later, because right now, joining us on the South Street Burger guest hotline is the voice of the Edmonton Oilers, Jack Michaels. Hello, Jack.
Derek, you know where I'd tell you to go, the place I lived for 8 years. You got to get up on the Kenai River in Alaska. So go ahead and book the flight. And $1,400 later, you'll be doing the best fishing you've ever done in your life.
Maybe I'll do a little gold mining up there while I'm at it. Pay for the flight.
Absolutely. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Just got back after a month-long sojourn, starting with the NHL draft, where both Edmonton and Calgary, I think, walked away with perhaps even more than they could have anticipated. And it kind of sets the table for what should be an awful fun time down in Penticton in 8 weeks, I think, from yesterday.
Absolutely. And the Oilers, surprisingly, did not win the draft lottery this year. I'm sure you were disappointed when that was the case. But they did get the number four pick and got a guy at number four who nobody outside of Columbus thought would be available at number four. But the Blue Jackets decide to pass. How happy were the Oilers to get the guy they got?
Well, I think, you know, all things considered, when the Oilers fell two spots from two to four, you know, the early take was, well, this is a top three draft, and then there's a bit of a gap. But, you know, as things approached, I mean, Matthew Tkachuk had made such inroads that the one question we'll never know is if, you know, I mean, there's a chance, I mean, we really felt like there might be an opportunity to get Puljujarvi at four because Columbus was going to take Tkachuk at three. So the way things shook out, and, you know, it was very similar to what happened from a Calgary perspective, and this might have been the year before he got there, but when they got Monahan at six and then the Oilers took Nurse at seven, very similar scenario where the guy there at six was a bit of a surprise. And certainly from an Edmonton standpoint, I think they were a little surprised. Not so much right when it happened, but as things moved along and they started to hear more and more that they'd have a shot at Puljujarvi at three, I think it was a bit of a a bit of a surprise to the Edmonton brass.
And you and I were both on the draft floor at First Niagara Center in Buffalo, and we both watched the Oilers, the Flames, and the Blue Jackets talk for about 90 minutes before the first pick came in. I do wonder how close those three teams were to making a deal, Jack. Any insight on that?
Well, I mean, another thing we'll never know. I mean, Peter Chiarelli said there were plenty of, you know, discussions that he had. But it's, you know, my hunch, Derek, to be honest with you, I mean, the best I have in terms of insight is a pretty strong hunch that as Edmonton realized that Columbus was maybe thinking of going in a different direction then Puljujarvi at three, what impetus would there be for Edmonton to move up and try to get the third overall pick? And so they kind of backed off that scenario and figured, well, if the guy that we're more than happy to take at four is going to be there at four, we're not as inclined to trade up to get pick three. And I think that's why Columbus came under some criticism in certain circles as to maybe showing their hand perhaps, you know, a moment or two before they should, and maybe not extracting some sort of compensation for trading down to four or five or six. So, I think it all worked out. I mean, obviously from a Columbus standpoint, you know, they're happy with the guy they got. And with all these draft things, Derek, it's awfully fun to talk about, and, you know, you feel vindicated or elated as you leave the draft floor with seemingly better value than you possibly could have hoped for. But I think you and I have been in the business long enough to realize that when you're talking about an 18-year-old athlete, there's still a lot of variables involved. And the only way to evaluate what happened on the draft floor will be 5 to 7 years from now, in my opinion.
Well, like you said, it looked like there was a ledge at number three and then another ledge at number six. So the fact that the Oilers get Puljujärvi at four and the Flames get Tkachuk at six, I think worked out pretty well for Alberta's teams as the Oilers add another really talented young forward to the mix. And we heard some rumors that if they weren't able to grab a guy like Puljujärvi, that they might go in the way of a defenseman. Mikhail Sergachev was a name that came up. What do you think the Oilers would have done? And I guess we can guess all day long and maybe not ever know the actual answer. But what do you think they would have done if Puljujärvi wasn't there at four?
Boy, I don't think they would have taken Dubois. I mean, that's the only firm thing I can give you. I don't think he was going at four. I think it was going to be Tkachuk or Sergachev. I really do. And to be honest with you, I think it was going to be – my hunch would be Tkachuk. But, you know, again, it's awfully tough when you're talking about what would have happened or what could have happened. But my strong hunch was that 4A was going to be Tkachuk and 4B was going to be Sergachev. I do not think they would have taken Dubois with the number four overall pick.
Well, getting Jesse Puljujärvi at number four at the 2016 NHL draft, certainly one of the big storylines for the Oilers during this offseason of 2016. Another, of course, they trade former first overall pick Taylor Hall to the Devils and get Adam Larson back. Your thoughts on that deal?
Well, I think you look at Edmonton's offseason as a whole, really, because the other major piece that's been added that Oiler fans have been screaming for, and quite frankly, I think Flames, you know, are in the same boat as maybe wanting to get a bit bigger up front, and that was the acquisition of Milan Lucic in free agency. The Hall for Larson deal, I think it's obvious. I think Peter Chiarelli is thinking, I'm willing to trade the better player now for the guy I think is going to be the better player in 3 to 5 years. I think he's taking a long-term approach to the trade. He basically, in his comments, almost conceded that right now on paper, Hall's the better player. I think that's an easy argument to make. But if you look a little deeper, you know, into the deal, Larson's basically been a full-time NHLer for the past two seasons. And in those 2 years, another guy that was constantly bandied about as a guy that could be moved for Taylor Hall, especially before he rescinded his trade request, was Travis Hamonic of the New York Islanders. And Larson's numbers, along with Hamonic's over the last two seasons, since Larson has firmly established himself as a guy game in, game out for New Jersey, are pretty similar. I think Larson is a bit fewer points, a slightly better plus-minus rating, and a comparable penalty minute total. And then when you consider that the Devils have been a bottom-five offensive team and the Islanders have that trigger-happy, up-tempo attack, the thought is, can Larson eventually be, or is he right now, the equivalent of Hamonic in points? I don't think he's ever going to be, you know, a Tyson Berry type guy, which a lot of Edmonton people wanted, you know, that 55 to 60 point defenseman, high, you know, at times high risk, but often brilliant rewards. But I think Larson can develop into a consistent 35 point defenseman, which some people will say is still not enough for Taylor Hall. And this is why I think, similar to the draft, it is very tough still
to evaluate 23-year-old players. I mean, Taylor Hall is 24 years old, and Adam Larson is about to be 24. So you're talking about guys that, you know, are still young players, and there's a lot to be debated upon. But what cannot be debated is that the Oilers had a greater need at defense than they did at wing, especially with, I think, the strong inclination that Milan Lucic was coming to Edmonton. I had heard, Derek, and I don't, you know, I can't, I'm not one of these insider guys. I'm not going to start making ridiculous claims that I know exactly what was going on. But I had heard that Lucic, as, you know, maybe 2 weeks before free agency opened, was telling, you know, some friends that he was strongly considering Edmonton as an option. He was excited about potentially coming out to Western Canada. So, you know, perhaps that also played a role in what Peter Chiarelli did. I don't necessarily think that's the case, but what I do think is that the Hall-Larson deal, as much hand-wringing as there was in Edmonton, is a deal that cannot be evaluated accurately today in terms of how it'll play out for both teams. I think ultimately it's going to work out very well for both clubs.
Joining us down the South Street Burger guest hotline, the radio voice of the Edmonton Oilers, Jack Michaels. And as mentioned, you and I were both in Buffalo for the NHL draft, and some rumors started floating around that the Canadians were at least listening to offers for PK Subban, which at the time I quite simply couldn't believe. And when I started to think about what teams out there can make a good enough offer to get this guy, the team at the top of my list was the Oilers. As a matter of fact, I couldn't really think of any other teams that had the assets to move to get a guy like Subban. So was he potentially plan A, and then when that didn't work out, Larson becomes plan B?
I don't think so, because I think Montreal's ask on Subban was far more than the Oilers were willing to consider. I think the Hall, Draisaitl, you know, potentially the number four, and either, you know, or a Draisaitl, the number four, and either of Nurse or Klefbom, you know, plus, got to be too much for the Edmonton Oilers. And you know, I think there might have been some discussions there, but I think the ask was never compatible with certainly an Oilers plan A, we'll put it that way. I mean, I just don't think that it ever reached the point where Subban was ever in a plan A category. I think that was more, you know, idle talk and some back burner stuff that ultimately wasn't seriously considered.
Some think the price tag was too high to get a guy like Adam Larson, but there's no doubt he makes the Oilers better on the blue line. And when I take a look at the blue line, I wonder how many top-pairing defensemen the Oilers currently have on their roster. Maybe Larson turns into that guy. I'm also wondering about Oscar Klefbom. Do you think he plays in the Oilers' top pair this year?
Well, I think if Klefbom were a student, Derek, and maybe you and I, you know, had similar experiences with some of our courses, you know, when in doubt, there's an incomplete. You know, we'll take the incomplete and worry about it next semester. And I think Oscar Klefbom has shown flashes that he can be a top-pairing defenseman in the NHL. But at this point, I have to give him an eye because he just hasn't stayed healthy enough. He's got a long way to go on his deal to prove that he is a top-pairing defenseman. And I think it stretches. He has been that guy for the Oilers. He's been, you know, playing 22, 23 minutes of largely, you know, solid hockey with the ability to move the puck and a shot when he chooses to use it. But he's still a young, developing defenseman that's missed a lot of time due to injury over the course of his very brief career. So he hasn't played a lot of hockey yet. And that's why I hesitate to kind of label him as a surefire top-pairing defenseman. I think the guy that you didn't mention that I think can be a top-pairing defenseman in time is Darnell Nurse. And one of the reasons why is he's got what players say he's got the mean on. I mean, he can be vicious out there. And certainly Roman Polak found that out last year. And I don't think that bothered too many guys in the organization. I mean, he's a guy that plays with an edge and that skates fairly well, that can recover when he gets caught out of position. And like Klefbom, he's got to play more pro games before he can be you know, consider that top pairing guy. So potentially, I think they've got three guys in Larson, Nurse, and Klefbom that can eat up, you know, 21 to 23 minutes of playing time a game and do it at an elite level. But they're all young defensemen. I mean, you're talking about two guys out of the 2011 draft, Larson 4 and Klefbom 19, and then Nurse, who, as we already talked about, went right after Monahan in 2013 with the 7th overall pick. That's still a bit in the distance as far as comparing them with guys like Giordano and now more recently TJ Brody. I mean, right now those are top pairing defensemen in the league. I think Klefbom, Nurse, and Larson still have more hockey to play before you can, you know, say for certain that those are top pairing NHL defensemen. It's an elite group, Derek, and quite frankly, Calgary's fortunate to have two, because I'm not sure even top two defensemen, there might not be more than 35 in the whole league. And in terms of number one defenseman, I think you're down to about 13 or 14 that I would consider legitimate number one defenseman in the NHL. It's a rare commodity, and the Flames are fortunate to have two of them.
Yeah, they certainly are, and some would argue Dougie Hamilton would be a top-pairing guy on some NHL teams. But back to the Oilers.
I think he's going to be that. I think Dougie Hamilton, and Derek, maybe you disagree, I think he's more in the, you know, Larson. I think he's got a bit more hockey to play. I'm not quite sure I'd put him there yet, but you're right. He's definitely a guy on the cusp.
No doubt about it. And even without Taylor Hall, I mean, the Oilers still have a ton of talent up front. The blue line looks to be improved. Cam Talbot gave you pretty good goaltending last season. I would think he'd even be better in his second full year as a starter in this league. And one question I've asked myself is, when will the Oilers finally turn the corner? And I can't imagine the team won't be better this year with a healthy Connor McDavid and a healthy Oscar Klefbom. If those two guys can stay on the ice, I think they're automatically a better hockey team. But Jack, is this the year this team finally puts it all together?
Well, Derek, this is going to be my 7th year, and I think for 7 consecutive off seasons, I've been asked that very same question. Certainly, I feel like the Oilers are a better club today than the one that ended the 2015-16 season. There are some variables. I mean, can Milan Lucic, you know, be that consistent 20-goal, 30-assist, you know, 110 penalty minute that along with a guy like Pat Maroon can give the Oilers top six skill with plenty of jam to back it up. And I think we saw Pat Maroon play at a pretty high level in the last 20 games of the season. It's still a small sample. Lucic is a proven guy, but, you know, there's questions. Is he entering the back nine of his career, or is he still very much at his peak? You know, I think Lucic, I know the term was criticized by some, but I'm not so much worried about the term with the Lucic deal. I'm worried about the next 4 years. I think Edmonton's in a big position to take a giant step forward, to make a 15 to 20 point improvement. And you mentioned, you know, maybe the return for the Taylor Hall deal wasn't quite what Edmontonians had in mind, but as Peter Chiarelli said, sometimes these deals hurt a little bit. I mean, to get quality players, you're not going to give up chump change. You're going to give up prized assets. And Taylor Hall falls into that group, but where was the area of need? As you point out, the Oilers needed another, you know, top four defenseman that they could reliably count upon to eat up the minutes that got away from them late in games too often, not only last year, but in each of the previous six. So I certainly think the Oilers are in line to take a jump forward. But in the Western Conference, it's easier said than done to turn a 70-point club into the 95-point club that's going to make the postseason. My hunch is the Oilers will consider it a significant step forward if they can push through, maybe get around 85 points, and most importantly, get some of their young players the experience of playing meaningful games at the end of March when playoff positions are still at stake.
For a number of years here in Calgary, they talked about the need to change the culture, and the Flames have clearly done that. And even though they took a step back last year, most around the league think they'll probably take at least a half step forward, if not a full one, this season. Last season, we saw some of the frustration, whether it be from Peter Chiarelli or Todd McLellan, and I think they're both very good at the jobs they do, but frustration that the culture wasn't changing quick enough in Edmonton. Did you see some progress, though, with that Oilers team a year ago? And does that give you hope heading into a new season?
Well, you know, I think that both Todd and Peter realized there was a lot of work to be done. And, you know, sometimes it takes 40, 50 games into a season and completely understanding the group that you've inherited to realize, you know, how much work there was needed. I mean, Peter Chiarelli and Todd McLellan are not used to being, you know, out of the playoffs in mid-January. They're used to fine-tuning their well-oiled machines for that playoff run that they knew was coming in April or May. So, you know, it was, to some degree, a new experience for them. But I also felt like they felt and I felt like there was, you know, by the end of the year, some significant pieces added and a club that started to look more like the kind of club that Todd McLellan and Peter Chiarelli want, which was a little bit bigger, a little bit more of an edge, and retaining, you know, a good portion of that skill that the Oilers have had, at least for the last 4 or 5 years. But outside of that skill, the Oilers too often found themselves pushed out of the games in Western Conference play that you need to win in order to secure a playoff spot. Too many times getting boxed out by the likes of the Kings and the Ducks and teams that, Derek, you know, sometimes it doesn't, you know, take effect in the first or second meeting. But by the time the Ducks and the Kings are leaning on you for a fifth and sixth time in the same season, that's when you start to see the effects. So I think the Oilers are far more equipped to handle that type of pressure and that type of attack that has allowed those two teams to essentially dominate the division the last 4 years, ever since, you know, Vancouver kind of fell a rung or two down the ladder. So that's where it sits right now. I think Edmonton is better suited to handle it, but they've got to prove they can do it, not only just over an 82-game season, but for Oilers fans and the players themselves, they got to prove that they can still be around by game 50 and 60. They got to prove they can win enough games at the beginning of the season to make sure that, you know, wins coming in February and March actually mean something. The Oilers have had decent second-half charges where they've played some pretty good hockey. But, Derek, they haven't had anything really on the line at that time. And that's the next step for this club, to prove they can win some games when it actually means something in the standings, when the pressure's still there to remain in the thick of playoff contention. That's still an unknown for guys like Jordan Eberle, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Dale Yakupov, guys that have been here a while.
Well, it's an awfully exciting time to be a fan of Alberta's two NHL teams, especially because of all the great young talent, but an especially exciting time to be an Oilers fan in Edmonton right now because of the new building. How's Rogers Place coming along?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, it's exciting, and trust me, you know, it was a lot of fun to, you know, spend the last few games at Rexall, and I know you had an opportunity to kind of take that in a little bit, but the bottom line is, you know, that facility had kind of run its course. It had a good 42-year run, and this Rogers Place is just going to be fantastic, you know, especially for the fans. A state-of-the-art facility, but most importantly is retaining seats closer to the action. I'm always a guy, Derek, and I think you and I have talked about this before. I'm not one that necessarily – you know, the suite experience is not that important to me. It's, can I find a lower bowl seat that puts me in the thick of things? And that's the great thing about Rogers Place, is there's a ton of seating in the lower bowl. And even in the upper bowl, it's a lot like Montreal in the sense that it's a bit steeper than some of the newer facilities that are out there. So, in other words, you're pretty close to the action. And that, for me as a fan, is the most important thing, that I can kind of feel the game, because hockey, as you know, it's fun, and HD has done a lot, but ultimately, as great as it is on television, it's far better in person. I think Rogers Place will kind of bring that to fruition just a bit more in terms of having all the bells and whistles while retaining a seat that's very much putting you in the thick of the action.
I think we could talk all day, but I don't want to take up all of your time on this Friday afternoon. So a couple more questions for the radio voice of the Edmonton Oilers, Jack Michaels, and the Battle of Alberta. I'm not sure it'll ever be what it was back in the 1980s and even the early 1990s, but I'm calling it the new Battle of Alberta now, and I'm wondering, how far away do you think we are from really meaningful games between the Oilers and the Flames again?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And, you know, I know Bob Hartley's no longer with the Flames, but I thought he had real good insight in terms of where the Battle of Alberta is right now. And the cold, hard reality is it's been 25 years since they had a playoff series. And it was one of the greatest playoff series I can remember in my childhood, the 91 series, where the Flames won Game 6 in Edmonton and the Oilers rallied from 3-0 down to win Game 7 back at the Saddledome. But I think it's going to ultimately take a playoff series for this rivalry to get back to where it needs to be. And I do think it's an important rivalry in the NHL, and I think some animosity needs to be retained. But ultimately, unless there's a confluence of games near the end of the season where both teams are scrapping for a wild card spot, I think really the best way to establish rivalries in pro sports today is in a best of seven playoff series. And that's where I think you'll see it return, especially if it's the core of the current groups where guys like Nugent Hopkins and Eberle and Yakupov can line up, Draisaitl, McDavid can line up, opposite the likes of, Monahan and Bennett, and the list goes on for Calgary. I mean, that's ultimately where I think you'll see this rivalry get back to what it once was, or even a shadow of what it once was. I think nothing brings that out more than a playoff series.
Last one for you, Jack. A little off topic here, but do you like hamburgers?
Bud, you've seen me. Do you think I missed too many meals, including hamburgers?
Well, we'll have to visit South Street Burger then and enjoyed flame-grilled burgers paired with local craft beer. We'll have to do that on a non-game day, of course. We can visit their new location, now open in East Hill, 17th Avenue Southeast and Stoney Trail, because we'll be seeing a lot of each other early. As a matter of fact, the Oilers and the Flames will play split squad games on September 26th to open the preseason here at Scotiabank Saddledome in Calgary and at brand new Rogers Place in Edmonton. And then what a way to kick off the regular season, Jack. A home and home between the Oilers and the Flames in Edmonton on October 12th and then here in Calgary on October 14th. I don't know about you, but I can't wait.
Yeah, I'll look forward to it. And, no wonder you're all over the radio. That was one hell of a sponsor segue, Derek.
Is, bud. Well, hopefully they'll bring me a burger in because I'm kind of getting hungry. But, Jack, I definitely owe you one for taking up all this time today. Thanks a lot for taking some time to join us, and look forward to seeing you in September.
Always a pleasure, pal. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
All right, you too. There's Jack Michaels, the radio voice of the Edmonton Oilers, and the new Battle of Alberta, at least for me, it's coming along. And I think the first step was for both teams to rebuild and bring in some talent. And certainly the Flames and the Oilers have both done that. Looking forward to seeing what is in store for these two teams coming up in 2016-2017. Well, in store for us on today's version of The Big Show, Rob Kerr will join us at 2 o'clock, and there's a lot to talk about. The Stampeders' victory over the Blue Bombers last night. What's happening, especially with the Canadians at the RBC Canadian Open as well? The Blue Jays back in action after an off day yesterday. They will try to get back into second place, hopefully a half game out of first, when they return to the field tonight to take on a Mariners team that will come in for a three-game series at Rogers Center. Marco Estrada will come off the 15-day DL tonight, and he'll throw the first pitch right around 5:07. And, of course, you can watch the game on Sportsnet West and listen to it here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. The Sabres of Andrew Kane in trouble again. I'm sure we'll touch on that this afternoon. Same can be said for the Steelers, Le'Veon Bell. On a good news front, the Rangers and restricted free agent Chris Kreider get a deal done right before their arbitration hearing, a four-year contract with an average annual value of $4.6 million. And that and a lot more coming up on The Big Show. When we come back, I'm going to go through some of your texts because I asked for your help earlier on. I've got two buddies coming in from Ontario. They have never been west of Ontario. So I want them to get the true Calgary experience, the Alberta experience while they're here next week. We're going to do some golfing. We're going to do some fishing. We've had lots of great fishing spots thrown at us on 960-960. I thought we'd get hammered with golf courses to play, but it's been more about the fishing. And if there's something else that I'm missing, maybe it's not golf, maybe it's not fishing. Am I missing something? I mean, we're going to go to Lake Louise. We're going to go to Banff. We're going to do that stuff. We're going to try to find a grizzly bear or two. I don't want to get too close with what's happened with bears in southern Alberta this week, but I would like to see one from the car at least. We're going to do all that stuff, but is there something I'm missing? If there is, you can text us, 960-960. You can send me a message on Twitter, at Fan960Wills. So I'll go through some of those when we come back. I'd like to do a little Flames talk as well. I'm not sure with all that we have to talk about if Rob Kerr and I are going to have much of a chance to chat Flames this afternoon. So I'll throw a couple of topics out there and see if I can get you going on those. So that's when the Big Show continues. It is 1:51 on Friday afternoon, and this is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Calgary sports fans get their fix on the Big Show. Steinberg, Kerr, Sportsnet 960.
Quick update of the leaderboard at the RBC Canadian Open at Glen Abbey in Oakville as the Big Show continues. Derek Wills in for Pat Steinberg. Rob Kerr has taken his seat and will join us just after 2 o'clock. Dustin Johnson currently tied for the lead at -7 with Luke List. Jared Dutois, who, in case you missed it, has spent the last couple of years in Calgary and plays out of Glencoe Golf and Country Club. Only one off the lead at -6. He's one under in the second round and through three holes. Another Canadian starting to climb the leaderboard is Adam Hadwin. He's three under today and currently tied for 13th. And new full-time NHL referee and part-time golfer Garrett Rank, the amateur. He is even par so far in the second round, and he is also -3 in the tournament and tied for 13th place. So the Canadians, at least some of them, doing well at the RBC Canadian Open. So I asked for your help a little bit earlier on. I have two of my best friends coming in from Ontario, flying this Saturday night and leave next Friday. And I need to know what to do while they're here. We're going to golf. We're going to fish. We're going to camp. Tour around, go to Banff, Lake Louise. Getting lots of fishing tips at 960-960. And saying the Bow or Elbow River is an all right fishing spot really doesn't help me. But telling me to visit the Torrington Gopher Museum certainly does. Not. Quick off-topic text here. Good luck to the U-12 Blizzard Bruins soccer team. They're heading to Edmonton for the Provincials after a perfect 17-0 season. I'm sure Peter Labardius will be in attendance for that game. Heritage Point, Canyon Meadows. I've played both of those courses, both good recommendations. Someone's suggesting that I take them to Caesar's Steakhouse. I know that's a Calgary tradition, but here's the thing. I make a pretty mean steak at home, and there's nothing better than Alberta beef, so maybe we will head out for one steak. Apparently, the cheese toast is amazing as well. Water Valley Golf and Country Club. Haven't played there. Might have to check that out. Someone suggesting I head to the home of Chris Russell, Caroline, Alberta. His twin brother Ryan as well. I head out to Ram Falls via the Corkscrew. Beautiful drive, apparently. Haven't done that. That sounds fun. Whitewater rafting. Listen, I'm almost 40. That doesn't sound like a good plan. Not a great swimmer either. Anyways, thanks for all the suggestions at 960-960. Promised a little Flames talk. And at the end of the day, it doesn't mean anything. But I do like to go through the exercise of trying to put lines together during the offseason. Now, Rob's coming up in a couple of minutes, but we'll get you to text in your line combinations. Forget the defense pairings because I think the top four is pretty much set. And that means the bottom two, based on who they have under contract, is pretty set as well. I think it'll probably end up being Giordano and Brody on the top pairing again. Joki Paakka and Hamilton on the second pairing. And then you've got Englund and Weidman on the third. So don't weigh in on the defense pairings yet. Maybe next week when I'm back in. Tell me what your forward lines would look like. And maybe Rob and I can give you ours as well a little bit later on in the show. But tons to talk about. We've got the Stampeders improving to 14-0 coming off a bye week dating back to 2005. And they are a perfect 5-0 at Investors Group Field in Winnipeg since it opened back in 2013. Now 2-1-1 of the season. Big 33-18 victory over the Blue Bombers last night. As mentioned, a bunch of Canadians in contention at the RBC Canadian Open. We'll touch on that. Of course, our team, the Blue Jays, back in action tonight. They didn't play yesterday. They actually slid into third place in the AL East, but they're only a game and a half out of the division lead, and we'll try to take a bite out of that deficit tonight. Marco Estrada coming off the 15-day DL. He'll be on the mound, and first pitch is scheduled for 5:07 on Sportsnet West. You can listen to the game right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan as well. Mentioned earlier the Stampeders victory over the Blue Bombers. Coming up at 3, Justin Dunk will join us. So stay tuned for that. Justin has been a regular on the big show this week. So good to hear from him again. Bad to hear from Evander Kane and Le'Veon Bell again. Sabres forward, arrested earlier today in Buffalo. And the Steelers running back facing a 4-game suspension for a missed drug test. So with all the good news in the world of sport today, a little bit of bad news as well. Some more good news. If you're the Rangers and Chris Kreider, they figure out a contract minutes before the arbitration hearing. And I think it was a pretty good deal for both sides, quite honestly. A 4-year, $18.5 million pact. That's a $4.6 million average annual value. And I know Rob will want to weigh in on that contract. And again, Matt, you and I talked about it. They have arbitration, but rarely do teams and players get to the actual hearing. It's more of a game of chicken trying to figure out who's going to blink first.
Yeah, without a doubt. That's how it's kind of turned out, especially the past few years. You definitely noticing the teams trying to avoid it more and more. I feel like it's not really like something that teams enjoy going and doing, and same with players. I feel like it's not really, you don't get excited to go to arbitration with one of the players, right?
No, and I mean, one of the reasons why you don't get excited, well, I think the main reason why you don't get excited is you don't know how it's going to go. If you lose, you might be in a position where you have to overpay a player. That's on the team side. If you're looking at it from the player's perspective, if you lose, well, now you might be bitter with your team because they went into an arbitration hearing and bashed you because that's what they have to do. And they have to convince the arbitrator that you're not worth what you want. So arbitration, not best case scenario, whether you're Dennis Weidman or the NHL or a team or a player. So arbitration is something that is available, but maybe not the best way to go for anybody involved. Anyways, I'm just rambling on here. Rob looks a little impatient over there, probably reading through all of these fishing tips. As you know, Rob is a fishing and radio guy. And he certainly has been kind enough to give me some advice on where I might be able to catch a fish or two or more with my friends next week. So thanks to everybody for chiming in at 960-960 and on Twitter at Fan960Wills. Rob Kerr coming up next as the big show continues on a beautiful Friday afternoon in downtown Calgary here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.